Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, and as we often do here on the show, we are talking about relationships, but as we've been doing more lately, we love to go to those folks who are a few steps ahead of us on the journey, and those are the married folks. Not that they have to be married a ton of years or whatever, but just even a few, and they've gotten some experience. So all of you just love Greg and Aaron Smalley, so they are back to talk about, as we teased last time, specifically engagement and how to maximize that engagement period before you get married. And really, what should you do besides pick out wedding cakes? I mean, honestly, people. So they're going to let us know. And for our inbox this week, we bring in one of our counselors, Christina, to help us address a reader who writes in about she and her fiance having a source of conflict in the fact that she is a little bit more conservative with some views on things, in this instance, modesty, things surrounding modesty. And she actually is afraid to bring it up with him, and she's wondering how she can communicate this. So obviously there's some underlying issues there as far as conflict and communication, so we will parse that out here. And now for our roundtable, we've got a fun group of folks assembled because we're going to talk about conflict in marriage. And you know, we alluded to this with Greg and Aaron, and they apparently have worked through all their conflict and now have a perfect marriage, so we couldn't talk to them. So we had to get some real people on the street who just either duke it out or shut down or use their various styles to deal with conflict, except for the fabulous Diane Angolia. Welcome, Diane.
Woohoo!
Who glad also falls under the does everything perfect in her marriage category.
Holy schmoly.
After 35 years of marriage. 35, that's a milestone.
It is, Diane. Indeed.
And not only that, but she and her husband, Roger, who you know, he's also been on the show. Love him. Really counsel and mentor a lot of young married couples heading into marriage as well as those who are newly married. They've been doing that for quite a while now. So she'll have some great insights. Then part of a couple that just definitely needs some mentoring, we have Jeremy Woodard. Or just one half of it. You know, we didn't have to bring his wife in here, but just him. So he can get some good guidance. So
good to be back.
Married how long now?
Seven and change.
Heading in there. That's the, you know, that's the perfect number there. Holy scriptural. That's good.
We try.
Seven. And Andrew Montgomery, first time on the show. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you, Lisa. Good to be here.
Very good to have you. Also Canadian, so we're trying to just diversify.
And American, too. Yes, both.
You're both.
Canadian, American.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you have to,
or American,
is one
Canadian
more preeminent, or you don't?
Well, I live in the United States, so I'll go with America on this
That's
one.
That's good. That's good. Well, we appreciate the dual perspective on things. Okay, we're going to jump right into it and talk about conflict. And the first thing that I want to ask y'all is, because obviously me being single, I have a great, you know, I don't have to deal with marriage, so I get along with myself just fine. So I find that my decisions at home and what I choose to do with my finances and with my time and my energy, I don't really have a lot of disagreement. So it works well for me. But you guys have another person in the mix. And I want to know, first of all, what would you say, like, even before you got married, how did you deal? Because we talked to a lot of people who realize that once they get married, they didn't even have any structure for dealing with communication issues or conflict at all. They would either just walk away from situations. I mean, when you're single, you can just dump people, you know, let's be honest. So what would you say kind of was your conflict IQ when you were younger before you really had to deal with all this on a day-to-day basis?
Coming from this Italian family, there's really a mix of passive aggressiveness. And so in my household, how it was is they said, you did. So there was no conversation. It was, we said it, you obey. And if you didn't obey, you got the look. And the look was enough to, I mean, it would have been better if they would have just spanked me or done something, but it was just the look. So to have conflict and have healthy conflict and conversate back and forth, that was never allowed in our household. Here's the interesting thing. I married a very verbal man who wants everything out onto the table. So my style was, well, wait a minute. What do you want me to do? I don't want you to do anything. I want you to do what you want to do. I know, but what do you want me to do? So here is this anger that is building in him because I don't really know, because I wasn't really allowed to have an opinion or give an opinion. So two extreme opposites, both Italian, the one that you would picture on television, the loud, yelling, screaming Italians, and then the very sophisticated Michelangelo Italians from northern Italy who solve their conflicts by going out and chiseling something out of marble. And so it's been an interesting mix. How do you blend those two things? Mm-hmm. And I think the first time Roger raised his voice, he should have hit me. I think I could have taken it better because I didn't understand that raising your voice didn't mean I hate you. It just meant let's deal with this right now and you're really making me angry because you're not. Hmm. So that was rough our first couple years. Yeah. Thankfully, we had someone to walk through that with us.
Mm-hmm. I entered marriage. I thought I was very good at conflict, and it turned out I was. I was fantastic at creating conflict and not dealing with it appropriately. Mm-hmm. So I think it's interesting how we've grown over the years. But in the first year, I think I've talked about this when my wife and I talked about this with Lisa before. But I went ahead and put my fist through a wall. I've yelled at my wife, and I've broken a file cabinet by punching it. So that was the first year of marriage, and it's gone considerably better since then, since my wife forgave me for each one of those. But overall, it's been interesting because I still have, at times, a difficult way of communicating, and it's not often the way that my wife would appreciate. And so similar to how you were describing Roger, I get a little bit loud, which shuts my wife down, and we've talked about it at length, and it's gotten better. That's nice. Mm-hmm. And she still forgives me, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And I haven't hit anything in years, which is nice. Mm-hmm. So
that's good.
That's nice.
It is nice. This is all nice. Mm-hmm. What I have learned with Raj over the years too is that there are a couple ways I can handle this conflict. The first way was I became his mother, and I'm like, you behave like a 3-year-old. Well, that didn't help the situation any. That kind of compounded it. Then my second approach was the Holy Spirit. So he started calling me HS because I'd say, now in God's economy, Diane, that's not the way that you would handle me. And then I thought, okay, now I'm just going to handle him like I would think a wife would. Think of what your children are going to grow up like if you behave in this. So I thought, okay, those three approaches were not good approaches. And what I learned is I need to be on my knees in prayer, and he's my best friend. I need to handle this like a friend. He doesn't need another mother. He definitely doesn't need me as his Holy Spirit. And he doesn't need me to be that wife that is always saying, look what you have done to our children by mm-hmm. your example.
Mm-hmm. My dad always pulled the spiritual card. That was his role. So he was very much a quieter personality. My mom was the very outspoken one. And she tells about when they were in an argument, my dad tried to ratchet it down and say, Dorothy, let's just pray about this. Let's stop and pray about it. And my mom said, I don't want to pray about it. I want to fight about it. Mm-hmm. So they had to kind of come in a little impasse mm-hmm. there. So, Andrew, what about you?
I have never really been a big fan of conflict and have usually taken it as a bad sign. So my way of dealing with it has been to kind of just avoid it. You know, if it happens late at night, just going to bed seems to be a great way of dealing with it, because then 12 hours will pass. Well, not 12 hours, 8 hours, maybe six. I've got five kids, so someone's always up at 5 a.m. So I came into marriage with that. Don't remember really growing up at home with... We didn't really have conflict in our home. We just all kind of tried to avoid it, tried to make the peace, and, you know, just didn't try to rock the boat. And so I've always just tried to deal with conflict by moving away from it and hoping it kind of goes away. Found out in marriage that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And that's been something that I've been working on for many years. Rachel, my wife, one day told me, you know, when you try to avoid conflict by going to bed, what that communicates to me is that you don't care enough about me to deal with what we're fighting about, which was a real revelation to me. I thought, well, actually, I'm helping solve it just by going to sleep, but apparently not.
Mm-hmm. You just figured it would go away by morning.
Yeah, it just kind of goes away, right? Or yeah. Ratchets down a few levels. But what it does is creates more of a slow burn.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what, I mean, I'm assuming that once you go into marriage, there are a lot of things that you just don't know about your spouse until you're married. And it's kind of like that day and day, just the grind of like, oh yeah, I know that kind of irritates me, or that, you know, it's a little bit rosier, maybe the picture beforehand. So we talk a lot about pushing people's buttons. Now, do you find that you're a button pusher kind of unintentionally, or are you the person that you know your spouse's buttons, and when you want to go after them, you're going to be like, and do what you need to do? Two confessions.
So did you talk to my wife this morning? I just want to know. This is Jeremy. I know my wife's buttons, and it depends upon whether or not we're in the middle of conflict. And I actually like what Diane said earlier, which is when the both of us individually and together are really on our knees, or we are consistently in prayer, it's a non-issue. There's no button pushing. There's nothing like that, because you don't want to. You want to foster and you want to grow your partner. And I've noticed that when we're both tired, we have an 8-week-old, 9-week-old right now. A lot of times we aren't spending as much time, you know, together, you know, praying. And as a result, last night around midnight, I knew her buttons and I pushed them because I was tired and frustrated. And so, similar to Andrew's point, I end up waking up in the morning and apologizing for the last hour and a half of the evening, you know, that kind of a thing. So it's just one of those things where I push her buttons, but it's when I'm not in the Word, or when I'm not consistently in prayer, or I'm not being forcibly choosing to be led by the Spirit.
I think sometimes conflict, people think that equals broken relationship, rather than conflict equaling, oh, we've got a situation, let's see how we can solve the problem. So you go into a survival mode. How did you survive before? Did you survive by yelling? Whoever yelled the loudest won, or whoever was the most invisible one. So when you go into that survival mode, it depends on, you're pushed into this corner because conflict equals not relationship. So you quickly know your person well enough to know, this is the time I'm going to really dig him, so I'm going to push that button. Or this is the time when my non-conflicting attitude is going to push the button as well. So it's like you get to know that person well enough, because conflict equals, oh no, I'm not in their favor anymore, rather than this is an opportunity for us to grow. So learning that in my life has probably been one of the biggest things, that conflict doesn't equal, you know, they're trying to fight me, they're trying to win. Who wins? How come you always win? How come I'm always the one that asks for forgiveness first? So it becomes this battle of wills back and forth. And that can get ugly really fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think once I realized we had two sinners living together in the house, and then five more little ones, but the two of us together, realizing that conflict is naturally going to happen. It's a chance to glorify God in that. It's not something that I don't go looking for conflict, but now when it does come up, I realize, hey, this is all part of being married. This isn't odd. I don't need to run from this. This is something I actually need to lean into, and it's for the good of the relationship, and this through this we can glorify God. Now, I usually think about that much later after the conflict, but it's helped me to realize that this is normal. This is part of living in this world.
Mm-hmm. How much do you guys think that the conflict that's kind of been bred in your marriages has been a result of unrealistic expectations? Like going into marriage thinking that this person is going to do this or be similar to you in this way, and they're not, and just kind of placing things on them that aren't them.
I know Roger will tell you that for the last 35 years, I've been saying, Roger, if you would only be just like me, then we wouldn't have this problem. And then he's like, but I'm not you. I know, but honey, just let it go. Let it go. So I think that you do. You say, if you would respond like I do, then we wouldn't have this problem. Mm-hmm. And I really thought that he would just grow and he would learn from my example of letting life just, you know, go by you. And that's not true. Roger's Roger. And I love him because he is. But we do go in with these expectations that I think women say, I'll change him. And the man goes in saying, oh, I hope she never changes. And of course, neither one of those are true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you hope they change the next day after you marry them.
Yes, the way you want them to be.
The saying, you marry your mother. I didn't marry my mother. So my mother's a very quiet person when it comes to conflict. She's the keeps it inside, who goes the silent. At least that's what I got to see. I don't know what they did behind closed doors. But my wife is a wonderful, fiery woman. So it's one of those things that over the years, I love it. I'm so excited that she's that way. It's just I have to fight my natural desire to suppress that in her. Mm-hmm. And that's quite a bit of a hurdle.
Yeah, I don't think I consciously went into marriage thinking I'm always right, and if we just do things the way I want them to be done, everything will be okay. That's just kind of the way it worked out. And realizing, that a lot of our conflict has happened because I'm really good at spotting what Rachel may be doing wrong, or in a discussion. It's the gift of discernment.
Does she appreciate that?
she's coming around to that ministry gift. Yeah. It's just we're almost there. 13 years we've been married. I think by 15 she'll really appreciate it. But realizing that. My gift of the gift I thought was discernment was actually pride, was pretty humbling. Mm-hmm. And she was helpful in pointing that out. And now when we get into conflict, I actually have to ask myself, is there something I'm doing wrong here? Because before that wouldn't have even occurred to me. I would just look at what she was doing and say, okay, I can see where if she would change that, this whole thing could go away. And that's pride.
So we talk some. I mean, I like Ruth Bell Graham has been known to say, a happy marriage is the union of two good forgivers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty important. I think that's probably something that a lot of people don't go into marriage thinking. They think, you know, a happy marriage is people who can either talk things out or find a way to not have conflict or whatever. But really, marriage is daily repentance, I think, on some level. And you're going to constantly disappoint your spouse. And the only thing that's surprising is how many different ways you can do it, I guess. So, again, reasons I'm single. But I think if you look at forgiveness, how would you say, there's a lot of talk about this idea of fighting biblically within a marriage. What does that look like in your marriages?
Old or New Testament?
Oh. An eye for an eye, or 70 exactly. times seven.
Well, you know, about the full picture there, Jeremy. Full picture. Redemptive. The redemptive picture.
I think sometimes it's just recognizing what is the real issue so that does it even need forgiveness, or is it just totally a misunderstanding of words? Because we have two different sets of words, and what one word triggered in me something that he totally didn't mean, or I triggered something in him that there's a misunderstanding, and an argument grows and grows, and then you don't even know what it's about anymore. It's like, what is the real issue? And then when you see, is it my issue? Is it his issue? That doesn't even really matter. Let's restore the relationship. So we have learned to ask for forgiveness a lot faster, but not who can do it first so that I win. So again, pride. But it's really, what is the issue? I am so sorry that I hurt your feelings on that when that was never my intention. Rather than saying, well, if you would, don't you know me better than that? Why would I want to hurt your feelings? It's like, it didn't matter. I hurt his feelings. So I'm going to say, honey, I did not mean that in any way. Please forgive me for that. But you're right, that idea of forgiveness, true forgiveness, and getting down and then letting it go and not bringing it up later, because that's where those buttons are.
It's funny you say that, because that reminds me of a friendship conflict that I had in the past, where my impression as a high thinker on the Myers-Briggs was, as long as someone convinces me that I'm wrong, I'm obviously going to apologize. But I just bring an attorney into the relationship and say, well, let's parse out who's right, who's wrong. Total disregard for feelings. And I'm like, you know, I remember a friend, I hurt her feelings, not through anything wrong that I did, but just by disregarding or being insensitive to something. And so I remember telling her, I hope you don't think that I'm going to apologize for this because I'm not wrong. And that didn't go over well.
I'm going to use that line. That's great.
I hope you don't think that I'm going to apologize. That was really godly and a great response for me. So yikes. But I guess I have some work to do on that. But any other thoughts on that? Jeremy's smirking.
I my conscience over here, also known as Diana, she really hit on the big thing when you talk about fighting biblically or fighting in a godly spirit. The conflict doesn't have to be horrible. It doesn't have to be, you know, we're not in love with each other. But when it's done correctly, it's very rewarding, because there's a lot of respect and a lot of love that can go on both ways, especially with the forgiveness and the apology component if you do it wrong initially. And thankfully, I've got a wonderfully forgiving wife, because as you were talking about, I bring two generations of attorney into every single conflict. And so I want to let her know how absolutely wrong she is, as proven by everything in our past. Mm-hmm. And she's just sitting there going,
bring up all the evidence.
Yeah, everything, everything. And she just sit there and just kind of go, yeah, but I matter right here, right now, and none of that matters. And it's very true, because I want to bring everything into this. And she just wants to deal with the issue. And that's really the key there. Deal with what's going on, get to the bottom of it, and just go from there. And then, like you said, forgiveness is so huge. So I win, FYI, on who I married.
I think we've learned, when we both own our part of the conflict, it's never 100% one way or the other as far as who's in the wrong, although I used to think it was that way. And so I would play the attorney and try and prove my case. But when we both own whatever, in any conflict, you've done something wrong, you know, or you've, especially if it's escalated into something where there's yelling or punching walls or just, like I prefer, just kind of slinking away and trying to avoid it. There, you have to own what you've brought into the conflict, and even if you feel like, well, the other person has a whole bunch that's wrong. Just learning, hey, I got to own what I've done here.
Even in conflict, some people thrive in the conflict, and it's like an adrenaline rush. So you enjoy the 5-point argument. And Raj loves the 5 points. Point number one, and then under that is A, the spiritual application, Diane. And then point number two, and he would do that with the kids as well. And so you could see them they're in Hawaii in their brain. They're looking at him, but they are so not there. And so he'd go through this long lecture, and I'd finally, honey, let me try this. Let's just try this. What did you do? I did this. Was it right or wrong? It was wrong. Don't do it again. No, Diane, you have to go through the 5 points with the spiritual application. And there's like a thriving in that resolving of the conflict, where I probably lean more toward you, where I just want to get it done. What's the bottom line? Why are we wasting time? I want to go shopping. There are shoes to buy. So it's like I want to get to the bottom line. So Roger's learned that I don't enjoy a long argument. I don't want to go there. But I also know he enjoys a long argument. So somewhere in the middle, there has to be something to allow him to express himself and his anger without checking out. But he also has to recognize an hour and a half discussion about how I folded the towel is not going to change how I fold the towels the next time.
That's good. Okay, so just really quickly here as we wrap up, I want each of you to go through and give, for those of us who are single and think that we're amazing and there's obviously no way that we could ever get into conflict if and when we eventually get married, what would you say is the biggest thing that you've learned, the biggest thing that singles need to know heading into marriage as to what to expect, what they should be prepared to lay down, just what they need to know on the front end from your wisdom and experience?
when you put it like that.
Well, emphasis on experience.
Emphasis on experience. I would say that you need to lean into conflict rather than try to avoid it. I think especially when you're single, you have the ability to totally, if you're a conflict avoider like I am, you have the ability to totally flee a situation. You could change churches if you want. You could ditch friends, break up with your boyfriend or girlfriend. I don't really have that option in my marriage, so there's something I need to work on there. You know, I have to be in it, but that my advice to singles would be, don't, if you're a conflict avoider, realize that in yourself and don't, and just lean into it. Actually engage in it. Don't see it as a bad thing. Work through it. Don't change churches every month just to find the perfect congregation out there where no one sins and no one rubs you the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to have conflict before you get married. We've actually had couples say, we never fight. That is totally a red flag because there's something else going on in that relationship. And when you get married and how you boil or grill the hot dog is totally going to make a difference in somebody's life. So you need to see how do they handle conflict. And the other thing that we've learned is, do they have a forgiving heart, immediate forgiveness of themselves and of you? And are they teachable? Because if you see that this is a stubborn streak that says, this is how I am, and you just take me the way you are, they're going to carry that with them into that marriage. And I would say, run, because you need someone that is teachable and is has a repentant heart.
I totally agree with everything they said. No, if I were to say anything, I would say, especially for singles, your way is not the highway, and it's not the only way. And just because somebody's different doesn't mean that they're wrong. And really allowing somebody to be different is enriching. It's not life-threatening, unless they're threatening your life, and then that's a different issue.
Unless they're going to throw the file cabinet at you,
right,
then there
right.
needs to be...
If they turn away from you and hit the file cabinet, maybe that's a little bit better, but
right.
No. That's honestly, good. It's just, it's really allowing humility in the sense that you really aren't the authority on everything or anything.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks, you guys, so much for weighing in from your experience, as we detailed on the front end of the conversation, and just really some great thoughts here and good wisdom from all of you and very honest answers. So we appreciate that. Those of you out there, if you want to weigh in on this, whether you are married or you're heading into marriage, maybe you even have some questions or something that this kind of sparked, do find our blog post and comment there, or write to us at editor@boundless.org, and maybe we'll track these guys down. If you say, so Jeremy, when you were saying this, what do you mean by this? And we'll make Jeremy answer it. He'll just come back with a response and we'll just grow along with him. So thank you all for being
thank
part
you.
Of the conversation.
Thank you.